Wow. I tell you, my name is Tom, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My sober date is May 8, 2004. I couldn't always say that. I just want to, I want to thank you, Alan, and the whole group here for the warm welcome. The slippers fit when I walked into this room. It was amazing. I opened up the screen, and I got a shot of love that I hadn't received in a Zoom meeting in a long, long time. I just want to give a quick shout out to the newcomers, the people counting days: Sam, Kojak, Kat, Cindy Lou, Ashley, Luke, Monica, Anitra, Aaron, Cliff, Hannah, Esme, Jen, Chris, Ashley, Anne Marie, Esme, Alex, not least Gary. I tell you, I remember when I was counting days, and I tell you, I think it's a very, very courageous thing to put your hand up, counting your days. It reminds each and every one of us that we all do this a day at a time. Alan mentioned that we do this one day at a time. Yesterday's sobriety does not keep me sober this day. I don't graduate from AA. I continue on a daily basis to get my daily reprieve. I started dancing around these rooms in the 80s, did not listen, learned nothing. Came back in the 90s, did not listen, learned nothing. Had an intervention in 1996, my second wife, my son's mother. Went to a 28-day program. I did not listen. I was busy doing push-ups and eating vegetables, getting myself in shape. And I learned nothing. I went out, took a home group that only met one day a week. My counselor told me, go to your neighborhood. Back then we had the paper books, pick a home group, make every home group meeting. I did not realize the problem. I did not know what I did not know. I did not know that alcoholism was a progressive disease. I did not know that it was a disease. I'm a very educated guy. I went to high school, graduated college, graduated law school, passed the bar exam, had a successful practice, but I was a raging alcoholic and did not know. But I did not know. I thought I knew well. I knew a lot of things. I knew nothing about my disease. So I picked the, I go through the book when I come out of rehab in 96. And there's a lot of meetings in the Bronx. Some of them 4 days, some of them 5 days, some of them 7 days a week. And that was a little too much for me because I really wasn't an alcoholic. So I picked the Henry Hudson group. Henry Hudson met one day a week, Wednesdays. That became my home group. Now think about the insanity of that. My loved ones locked me away, told me I was a danger to myself and to others, and put me away in a rehab for 90, for 28 days. And I did not know the depth of my problem. I refused to acknowledge it, did not even think I had one. Sure, I drank a lot, but I was a lot of very productive. I gave you a nice home. I gave you a couple of cars. You had a beautiful bouncing baby boy. Leave me be. I'm good. I was making work, making money, but my life was unraveling, unraveling, and I did not see it. I did not know what I did not know. So I joined the Henry Hudson group, and I get there on a Wednesday. And like every meeting in my early sobriety, I got there in the middle of the preamble and left in the middle of the All Father. I did not listen. I did not do anything. Didn't get a sponsor. Didn't get a big book. Didn't get any service commitments. I came, I went. I said, fine, I'm good. And I stayed dry for about a year. And now I'm walking down Fifth Avenue about 11 months later with a woman on my arm, not my wife. And I walk into the Mustang bar. Now, folks, I did not realize I had not drank for a year. The thought never came into my consciousness. That I had not been in a bar for a year, that I hadn't drank for a year. I walked in with a young lady on my arm, ordered a Solo Martini straight up. Boom! Didn't even realize it when I was drinking it, that I had not drank for a year. That's the insanity of this disease. Totally captured my consciousness that I just blocked it all out from my reality. And I'm out for 10 years. I'm out for 10 years. My wife divorces me. My second wife divorces me. She was into the program. God knows she needed it. I did not need it, though. I did not know what I did not know. This is the insanity of this disease. I did not know about alcoholism. So I'm dancing around for about 10 years, and I'm outside, and I had a another girlfriend who drank like a drank like I drank. Beautiful woman. And me moving together in like 2000, and then 2000. Two, she moves out. She had enough. She goes into AA. And I said, good for her, man. That girl needed it. She was a mess. And I continued my shenanigans. Again, I didn't realize there was a problem. Bills were somewhere being paid. I was still making some money. I was paying the child support, paying the alimony. Everything is good, you know. I needed new underwear. I bought new underwear. Never did laundry. Oh, and he looked back on the insanity, the disease. Oh, my Lord. So I'm outside my local watering hole. The pipe is killed up in the Bronx. And Corinne, the girl who moved out a year earlier, she drives by in her Volkswagen. She sees me and she rolls down the window. She goes, "Tommy." I go, "Hey, baby, how you doing?" I got a nitwit. I got my hat on crooked, smoking a cigarette, Shannon, talking to some Spanish dude. I don't even speak Spanish, nor do I smoke. I got a nose full of candy, a belly full of whiskey. And she goes, "Tommy, what are you gonna do?" "What do you mean, baby? All good." She ain't smiling, Leo. She goes, "What are you gonna do?" And I think that was like a little moment of clarity for me. I said, "I want to go with you." So she calls me into her car and she gives me a kiss. And this kiss did not rekindle our romantic relationship, Meg, and that was never to be. But it told me something that I had subconsciously forgot, that I was worth something different. I had greater potential and I had a better life than what I was leading. My last drink was actually October 2003, but the insanity of this disease, I can't go back to the rooms. They're gonna know I was drinking. Now, Alan, I'm out of the rooms for 10 years. If I go back, they're gonna know I was drinking. Insane. But in May of 2004, man, I'm laying in my bed and I wake up and I am crushed. And I am desperate and I'm saying I should be hungry. I should be happy. You know, I'm not drinking. I'm working out. I'm doing better. House is clean. See, you know, the people in the rooms were—they were happy. Those men and women were happy. They found the solution. So I go back. They said I'm going to go back on Wednesday, but again, Billy D. So I go there early. Nope. I walk in the middle of the preamble. But what happens? God happens. Johnny, big time, puts his hand out, pulls the chair out. He goes, "How you doing? My name's John. Let's talk after the meeting." Now, Dory, I cringed. He said, "How did I made eye contact with this guy? What am I going to do now?" Sit through the meeting, cringing. Meet all the guys out in the driveway. And they're just yapping. They're not talking necessarily to me. They're introducing me. How you doing? And where are you going tomorrow night, Tommy? I got nothing to do at night with them, and I ain't drinking. I don't know. I'll see what I can do. He says, "Well, we're going to go to the Riverdale Group." And they invite me to six meetings in a row every night. And every night they invite me, I hem and haw like I got something to do, but I ain't got nothing to do. Egocentric, right? I'm too busy for this. And again, the insane disease. But the second meeting we go down to, I see these guys doing something I had never done before. And this is what my topic is. I see these men and women in the room actually listening to the speaker. And Peter, I literally thought to myself, what a profound idea. They're actually listening to the speaker. They would even turn around in their chair to look at the people sharing from the floor. And it struck me like, huh, I start doing that, Sam. And what happens? I hear my story from their mouth. I hear their recovery that perhaps I could absorb. I'm like, huh. But after that first meeting, they invite me to another meeting, the down-to-earth meetings in the Bronx and Manhattan College. The beginners meeting down in the cafeteria. It's about 125 people in room, 7:30 start. I get there at 7 o'clock, meet them. I know some of their names now. We go down. The primary share goes on, Alan. Now I'm in the front row, man. I got my hand up. I got shit to say, man. I'm a smart guy. I got three meetings under my belt. I'm like the second coming of Bill W. I got something to share. Yeah, Bill P Pete, see, Pete did this before. Pete felt the same way. I stopped prattling off some nonsense, my God. And I thought I was all good. And I thought I'd say, look at me, you know, I got my suit and tie on. Meeting ends, and everybody's milling around. And across the hall comes this old chap who I did not know. He walks over to me, and as he's walking over to me, Valerie, I say to myself, And he's going to ask me to share one of his meetings. I got 3 days of sobriety, man. Come on. He comes over to me. He's, "How you doing, kid? My name's Jimmy Burns. You know, many guys like you in the room. You're sharp, you dress well, you speak well." He goes, "But you don't know a thing about getting sober. So maybe you should listen more." I said, "Damn, a bit harsh." But it saved my life. Started listening. I knew nothing. I did not know what I did not know. We go to the next meeting, we go down to Marble Hill. And a woman named Marge, Jewish woman, she had about 30 years at the time. She's sharing from the podium, "Monica, this woman, from her first drink to that night, I drank drink for drink with her." Exactly the same story. I said, "How could that be? How could that be that she had the exact same drinking history as I do?" But she found a way out. She recovered. And she said, "I came in, I did not know what I did not know, and I had to listen." And I started listening. Guy comes over to me, "Pete, I'm going to be your sponsor. You got a big book, Tommy?" I said, "I got a big book." He goes, "Do you know where it is?" I go, "Well, no." "You ever read it?" "Well, not really." He gives me the big book. He says, "Read the stories in the back. Read the stories in the back." I go, "What about one to one? Read the stories in the back." I got the identification. I heard every cry from Dr. Bob. I heard every cry from every person who wrote a story in the back. I felt their pain. I witnessed it. But how could they recover from that? My bottom was not like that. How did they? They all did it by following a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard in the rooms, the secret to AA could be found in three words on the top of page 112. "Oh, really? Shortcut?" So I go home, I read 112. You know what it is, right, Billy? First three words on the top of page 112. "Read this book." Oh, how about that? "Read this book." I got snooking. Okay. So I read the stories in the back and I said, "Wow, there's a lot of hope here. A lot of hope." So when I was reading those stories, I was listening to those folks from the podiums. I listened to their, I identified with their pain, their drinking history, what they were filling in their soul with alcohol. I heard them say how they found a solution and how their lives got better. And I said, "How about me? Maybe I can do that. I can do that." They started going to me. That's in the neighborhood. The group got me involved. Keep coming. Sit down, the cotton in your mouth. Right? Take that ears, put the cotton in your mouth and listen and learn. And I started to learn. And then my sponsor and I did the stories in the back. He says, "I read the doctor's opinion. Talk about learning." I finally learned what the disease of alcoholism was. I did not know what I did not know. I thought I was an immoral person. I had no morals because of the shenanigans I pulled when I was drinking. I thought I was a man with no willpower. But man, that is so untrue. Think about what we've survived in our drinking history. We got willpower, man. We're here. We battle this disease daily, and we're still here. We get through fire and brimstone. But I thought I couldn't say no after the third drink. I had no willpower. I was a weak guy. The doctor's opinion took all that away from me. Said I had a disease, threefold disease. I could only be cured with a spiritual awakening. How about that, right? And then we start going through the steps. After hearing your story, after reading the stories in the back, yeah, and reading doctor's opinion, my sponsor says to me, "Tommy, look at your history. Don't look at mine. Don't look at Bobby's. Don't look at Peter's. Look at your history. How many times did you say driving up the major Deegan Highway, you're going to go into the Piper's Kilt to have two buds and a burger and be home by 9 o'clock? How many times did you say that and absolutely believe it? I used to walk into the boy, "Hey, Pete, give me a cheeseburger to go. I have a couple of beers. I'll be out of here by 9. 11 o'clock, burger's cold. I go to the phone and make that phone call, right? And then you're off to the races." Every single time. Every single time. So at that stage of my drinking and my recovery, it wasn't hard to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. And I also heard in the rooms, you hear these wonderful phrases in the rooms if you pay attention. You're not really losing when you surrender. You're just coming over to the winning team. Oh, ain't that the truth? I came over to the men and women who won the battle. They survived the battle. They faced the enemy and they said, okay, I'm going to go over this guy. I'm going to over this guy. I don't even need you anymore. You are not part of my life. I'm on the winning team now. I'm going to show you who's boss. Get that spiritual armor wrapped around you, given to you by the men and women in these rooms, man. It changes everything. And my life was unmanageable. I wasn't paying bills. I wasn't doing laundry. My bed was never made. Dishes in the sink. It was a bit of a mess. But I didn't see it because I took a shower in the morning. I put on a new clean shirt. That looked good, but I was a mess. And step two, right? I came to believe that a power greater than myself. Well, what about that? I can't even count. I'm all that. I don't really need any power greater than myself. And again, the stories in the back, the stories from the podium, my own history said, alcohol gets you, man. You stop making decisions about alcohol. How many times did you wonder you were not going to drink and you're going to stop in for two and you stay there all night? How many times are you not going to drink because you're going to go to your mother's birthday party and you go out for one beer and then it's 3 days later? How many times, Tommy, you're powerless over this and you got to get a power greater than you because you failed. Alcohol beat you on this one score. Every aspect of your life, you did pretty well, but this one got you. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Now I'm Roman Catholic by birth, right? But I always thought, Jesus was that handsome guy in the Easter movies. He couldn't really give me a hand in my daily life. So the group of drunks became my higher power. I came to believe that you folks could teach me how to get sober if I listened and took your suggestion. Your suggestions. Don't drink today. Come to a meeting tonight. Before you leave your house in the morning, figure out where you're going to go and build your day around your meeting. Oh, I can do that. Yeah, don't drink till noon. And then you call somebody at noon. Don't drink till 5. Call somebody at 5. That's it? Yeah, just do that. It sounds silly and, a big shot lawyer, but yeah. Simple suggestion. It got me sober. And come to the meeting tonight. And then Pete gave me the service commitment. I said to Pete, being a greeter is the best gig in AA. When he made me the greeter, I thought it was a little cheap. I'm a big shot lawyer. I gotta give me some big, give me like the chair or the group or something. He said, no, you're going to be the greeter. By far the best service commitment I've ever had.
2 minutes
You
left.
become the face of the meeting. You offer some joy and some love to a newcomer coming in. You show them where the bathroom is, where the coffee is. You introduce them to somebody who come in. Somebody walks in, a woman walks in. He's like, this is Dora from Florida, man. Say hello to Dora. Dora, this is Mary. Got a friend. Everyone here remembers the first person who shook their hand. That's the greeter. That's the beautiful part of this. And he learned that. He learned that by watching and listening to people. And then turn my life and will over to the care of God as I understand him. Early on, the group of drunks, tell me how to live my life. How do I start paying these bills off? How do I start paying these bills off? How do I go to court and deal with the divorce? How do I interact with my child? How do I make up for some lost time with the boss? And I didn't go to the guy who had three divorces asking about marital problems. I went to a guy who had a successful marriage. And my sponsor told me that. It kind of makes sense. But he wouldn't have had that knowledge if he didn't have a guy say, don't go to Bobby. Bobby's like you. He's a three-time loser. Go to Charlie. Charlie's married 38 years. And he's never been happier. Okay. Turn my life and move over to you guys. And I learned so much on how to live my life. And I've come to understand that this program is designed for living. It has a lot to do with alcohol, but not very much. It has to do with finding a way to fill that hole in your soul with some gracious living. And I've never been happier. I'm 24 years sober now, and I come to this room. I mean, th this room was just amazing when I walked in here. I got smacked with a dose of love you don't often see other than the rooms of AA. And I just want to thank you all. Sharon, thank you very much for the invitation. I want to thank everyone for having me on here board today. Alan, wonderful chair and some wonderful comments to the newcomers. God bless us all.